All week we've heard the resentment many in this country feel towards London, given eloquent voice by writers from Sheffield, Wales, East Anglia and Scotland. Before we debate the economic consequences of London's continued dominance, a riposte of sorts in this letter from the writer Tim Lott.
Dear provincial cities and towns and fields and villages, what I want to say is, well, I love you. I don't know you, most of you, but I love you all the same. I love you for your sense of humour, your strong sense of place, your beauty, your pride, the fact that you aren't London. You are, at least, identifiable, quantifiable, graspable. London is a thousand places with scores of blurred, overlapping identities. The native London Cockney has migrated to Kent and Essex and reality TV. We are left with only a melange, a mess, both magnificent and malign. Since I have declared my love, I must also be honest. As is the way with lovers, dislike shadows my love. I dislike the chip you carry so proudly on your distant shoulder, the resentment you have towards my great city, the ease with which you utter the words, I could never bring my children up there, without thinking how you would feel if I said the same thing about you. I dislike your lack of scale, the modesty of your ambition, and the lack of choice that implies. I dislike the fact that you prefer beer to food and bad food to good, and that you believe too much of what you read in tabloid newspapers. I dislike your bland architecture, your casual racism, and your not-in-my-backyard insularity. But whatever I think of you, I cannot deny that you, not me, a Briton. I am only London. I am the future, but you're still the past. Our heritage, our regional accents, our countryside, our mountains and valleys, our soul. I don't want to be you, but you water me and nourish me, like the Thames itself. I hope I offer riches in return. Not riches of money, but riches of art, of thought, of innovation and energy. The whole poetry of metropolitan life. We will never be fully estranged, you and I, but we will always be different. Yet I love you, Briton. If only I could believe that you loved me too. With affection and some resentment, from Tim, London.
Why, Londoners may feel hard done by, but what are the facts? Our economics correspondent Jonty Bloom has compiled this World at One 1 minute guide to the London effect.
London is another country. They do things differently here. London accounts for vast amounts of infrastructure spending, in fact, more than most of the rest of the country put together. Crossrail alone is the biggest construction project in Europe and the kind of rail system that would utterly transform any other part of the country. The city is the country's richest and highest paid district. Figures out today show that bonuses in finance and insurance alone were a third of the total for the whole country. And all that boosts house prices, making billions for homeowners in the capital. London supporters say its wealth and taxes subsidise the rest of the country. Its critics point to the huge spending in the capital on government, civil servants, the arts and sport. Why is the National Football Stadium in Wembley and not Wolverhampton? London also has some of the highest unemployment in the country and some of the poorest people. Areas like Tower Hamlets and Dagenham can rival any in the country for social deprivation. But large areas didn't feel the recession at all and are booming again as financial services lead the economic recovery.
Jonty Bloom, well, let's discuss what's caused this ill feeling between London and the rest of the UK and what could be done to mitigate it. Danny Dorling is Professor of Geography at Oxford. His essay in the New Statesman, published this week, is called The London Problem. Daniel Knowles writes for The Economist. Professor Dorling, why does London's economic dominance matter so much?
It matters because it's growing. It matters because the gap between London and the rest is getting rapidly wider. This is a rate of acceleration in the gap I don't think we've seen for decades. Much of the rest of the country has been getting poorer as average wages have been falling. The Nationwide today said that house price inflation was accelerating again up to 11%. That's driven by London, with almost 20% rises in house prices in the year in London. London is splitting away economically from the rest of the country. And it's that division, it's that increasing division in the society that is causing this anger that you kind of see in some of the bits of writing you've shown this week come through. And then the resentment back from London of why can't you love us? We're doing so well. You know, it's partly because you're doing so well and becoming so expensive and so different that the rest of the country is saying something's going wrong here. And if this division carries on, it's very hard to see where it would go, because in that article for the New Statesman, I compared different countries, and really only Russia, with the difference between Moscow and the rest of Russia, has as big a divide between its capital city and the rest as London does with the UK.
Daniel Knowles, it does sound like we have something to worry about here.
I disagree. If anything, what we have to worry about is that London isn't growing fast enough. It's the fact is that as a proportion of the population and as a relative to the economy, London it hasn't even surpassed its 1939 population peak yet. It's it is growing. It's this enormously dominant thing, but it should really probably be more dominant. Britain as a whole would be richer if London were this sort of bigger, more successful city in which more people could live and more businesses could locate more successful, interesting things could be done. It's a fantastic place that more people could benefit from if only it were larger.
Danny Dorling, even in your article in the New Statesman, you describe the real London, as it were, as already stretching much further as far as even Oxford and Cambridge, in your view. It should be considered part of a London region. And you've talked about perhaps getting rid of the Green Belt in order to allow some greater expansion of London than is currently possible. So you seem to think that actually there might be some benefit from all this.
I would swap floodplain for green belt. I think it's ridiculous that we use a belt designed when we didn't realise that it's flooding we need to avoid. And when London needs to grow, I mean, London 100 years ago was the largest city in the world. That's one of the reasons why we're not yet back to the densities that we got rid of when we knocked the slums down.
If London needs to grow, why is that then negative for the rest of the country?
If it could actually grow, and so house prices could come down, so you didn't have to pay such premiums in salaries to get people to work there, because you have to pay those salaries because they can't afford a house. If London itself could be allowed to grow a little bit, then that could calm things down. As it is at the moment, we have an official plan in this country that there will be no net migration. That's, you know, it's not what's happening, of course. We are having people coming in and they're coming to London. But while your official plan is to say there's no net migration, you cannot plan to grow London. Because who are you building the homes for if you plan to build them? And so London stays being physically small and heating up faster and faster, partly because of that. And the danger is it begins to look a bit like Tokyo in the late 1980s. And we know what happened to Tokyo around about 1991, 92. Booms do not always last forever. They don't always have a soft landing.
The problem, it's interesting, the Tokyo comparison. Tokyo is a huge city. I think what is different about London is that we do have this continuing migration in, and London is this factory of young people moving in, you know, from Britain and from all over the world. And they, you know, Londoners are 10 years younger on average than most of the rest of the country.
Do you think there's nothing we can do about this then, that we just have to accept that London is always going to be dominant, is going to get more dominant, and the rest of the country just becomes a feeder for it? It's a rather depressing prospect, isn't it?
The great worry, I think, for me is actually that the opposite happens, that we go into something like we did in 1940s and 50s and 60s, when London was sort of deliberately planned down, you know, and its population declined by millions, and London became this place that nobody wanted to be, and Britain as a result was poorer. I think actually my great fear is that this sort of, you know, there are legitimate worries about London's dominance, but that these translate into an overreaction and we end up killing London.
Daniel Knowles and Danny Dorling, we'll have to leave it there. It's a fascinating discussion. I know we could go on for hours. Maybe we will on social media. Thank you both very much. That brings us to today's closing headline.